no one thing has been the ideal form of communication mm-hmm. for him. So he uses several forms of communication, which is intense as a parent.
Hi, I'm Madeline Cheney, and you are listening to episode 15 of The Rare Life. Today, I have a special topic episode from Candace and Sean. They shared all about their son Miller with Angelman syndrome last week in episode 13. As we talked about in that episode, their number one challenge with Miller is his nonverbalism. So today they have chosen to share things that they have learned in trying to communicate with him. They sum it up in three aspects: be creative, be flexible, and be persistent. And they have some really great insight. So whether you have a child that is nonverbal, you know a child that is nonverbal, or you are curious about what it is like, join us. Let's welcome back Candace and Sean.
Hello.
Thank you.
Today, for our special topic, we're talking about communicating with a nonverbal child and things that you have learned in your journey with Miller thus far. And so what kind of tip or advice would you like to give to parents that may be also in that similar situation with a nonverbal child?
So I think, as a reminder, Miller is nonverbal, but he does desperately, like anybody would want to, he loves to communicate with the people around him and connect with them. So in our journey with having a nonverbal child, we've learn three kind of important aspects of helping your child be as successful in communication as possible. And those three kind of things that we've figured out is to be creative, to be flexible, and to be persistent. Mm-hmm. And so when I have struggled with Miller and communication, I think it's because I only wanted to do one thing at a time because I get easily overwhelmed. I work full time and we have five children. And so it's not an uncommon occurrence for me, especially to feel overwhelmed. And so the communication needs of our child are profound. And, it's pretty daunting when you think about, in Miller's case, he has to hear what we're saying verbally, think about the response he wants to have, and then figure out how to communicate that. So what a lot of kids with Angelman syndrome do is they use symbolic communication. So basically pictures of an item or a feeling to communicate with those around them. And so for Miller, it's almost like he has to translate a foreign language if he wants to communicate. Mm-hmm. So he has to hear verbally auditory information of what we're trying to say. And then he has to think, okay, what do I want to say, or what is my response to that? And then how am I gonna communicate that? And so for Miller, what has worked is a lot of different things. So being creative is a lot about trying different things through that communication journey. So with Miller, no one thing has been the ideal form of communication for him. So he uses several forms of communication, which is intense as a parent, because you have to know six different languages, basically.
Right.
So one of the ways he communicates is through sign. Motor planning is very hard for children with Angelman syndrome. And so that motor control and his ability to basically tell his hands to do what he wants them to do is hard for him.
Okay.
And so he does sign two words. He signs more and he signs all done.
Okay.
And that took us literally years of persistence to help him to do that. And his more is not the traditional, you know, the fingers together sign. It's clapping. but we know very clearly that that means more.
Right.
He's adapted it to also mean I'm displeased with the general situation.
Yeah, something different. But kind of more different.
Yeah.
But he also uses it because it is auditory. He also uses clapping to get our attention if we're not looking at him.
Right.
Oh, he will clap and then we look at him and then he'll like signal all done, you know, with his hands up and wiggling his hands.
Or he'll point to what he wants or look at what he wants. He'll
hand you his cup because he needs it filled with water.
Right.
You know, so he's also learned that if we're not watching him, that the signs are silent. Therefore, he needs to clap to get our attention.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the clapping has become this universal
attention getting.
It's attention getting. want different. This movie is horrid. I need something different. This isn't what I'm thinking about.
Right.
You know. So it's like, yeah.
And so you know, we use signs on a regular basis, but we also use eye gaze. So like all children, he thinks that our food is different than what's on his tray. Mm-hmm. So he will use eye gaze and kind of body language to get like closer to a plate or reach his hand out. So he uses body language. Mm-hmm. He also will guide our hands to what he wants. So if he's hungry, he'll go stand next to his high chair, or he'll go to the pantry and try to open the door, or he'll, what we affectionately call, do drive-bys in the kitchen when he's hungry. So he'll just walk into the kitchen and start looking around on the counters and touching stuff. And he's communicating that he's hungry.
Interesting.
So that's, you know, so he signs, he uses his body language. We also have a dedicated communication device for him. It's a Tobii Dynavox. And what that has is a program called Compass. And this is kind of our long-term hope for him, is that he can use this device for output. So what that looks like is it's a bunch of different symbols categorized in different folders. And so it's very complex for him to communicate with that, because like I was saying earlier, he has to take in auditory information, process what his response wants to be, and then when he uses his device, he has to think of what is the symbol for what I want to say. And then motor planning, he has to figure out how to navigate the screen.
Yeah.
And then he has to find the symbol for what he wants. Mm-hmm. And so it's extremely complex for him to communicate using his device. And so we haven't been as successful with that yet.
Yeah.
He is in weekly speech. He gets speech therapy. He has a one-on-one paraeducator at school to really try to help him with communication.
Okay.
But the device creates its own set of challenges, because they have batteries that sometimes run down if we use it a lot. So there's only, I think, about 7 hours of continual use battery life with the device. And then there are some, like at mealtimes, it's really not the best for him to be spilling water on his device or getting food all over the device, because then we have to take it out of the case and clean everything. And so that's kind of challenge. And so for those situations, we also have laminated copies of what's in his device that he can use. So like we have laminated words of more and all done. And being at home now, we're working on getting him like a daily schedule that's like laminated. So it's like, okay, Miller, it's time for, we're going to go ride our bike now. And the symbol for that would be, you know, laminated, and we would, you know, put it on like a strip of Velcro. And so there's a lot of creativity involved in communicating with a nonverbal child. And I think that the important thing that parents can do when they're communicating with a nonverbal child is just think outside the box. Not one form of communication is going to work all the time.
Okay.
I think that's overwhelming I'll honor that, that it is overwhelming, but it's also, I think one of my bigger tips for success is be creative. Like, just use what your children's abilities are and strengthen those, because I would love for him just to use his device to be like, I want water, or I don't like pickles, but that's not where we're at yet. And so I have to be creative, and I have to listen to him, and I have to critically think about what's going to succeed and what's not. And it can be, you know, challenging, but we know that. So that kind of leads us to the being flexible conversation. And I think I've kind of already covered a lot of that, is just to be flexible and to have a backup plan, because you know, communication devices, they break, right? I mean, yes, you have a warranty, but it has to go get fixed. So I think you always have to have multiple ways for your child to communicate, because you can't just depend on one thing. And so, yeah. And the other thing too is involve your kids, involve the babysitter, involve the grandparent. There's a lot of good research about modeling. So using his device to say it's time for dinner. So I'm showing him that that's how I communicate too. So it's not just about them, it being this one-sided thing. It needs to be in both directions. And so we're not, and I will be honest, I will own that I'm not always the best about that, but I know that is something that is helpful for him. And it has involved me getting an iPad, and I'm trying to get another copy of the Compass app on my iPad so that I can more actively model for him. But the company wants another $200 for the communication app. And so we're trying to save up for that, because his device was $7,000. You know, I mean, it's, you know, and that's part of the challenge of special needs parenting, is just everything is so expensive. And so, you know, in those times when you can't afford the more expensive modes of communication, there are things like PECs. Etsy, actually, interestingly, there's people on there that will create, PECs is that symbolic communication that I was talking about. So there are images. They will create custom boards for you, or like a custom like ring with the different images on it. And so having multiple ways to communicate with your child, being flexible, knowing that no one form of communication is ideal or perfect at all times. So having backup plans, having multiple forms of communication with your child for when his device is broken, or, you know, it's just logistically not possible to, you know, you go camping, you don't have electricity out camping. And so flexibility is really important, and use the people around you, use the babysitter, use, you know, at the grocery store, like make it as much as you can part of everything that you do. And that kind of leads us to the third aspect, or third kind of tip that I have. And this I'm going to own right now is my biggest stumbling block, and that's okay. You know, I try really hard to give myself grace, because I do work full time, and I do have five children, and now we're homeschooling five children, is to be persistent. So it's hard when you have children with profound communication disabilities and challenges to not get discouraged, to not get weary of, oh gosh, another day of modeling, another day of not getting through. It's really hard, but the fruit is there. And I know that it's just finding that time and space to be like, you know what, the laundry is just not going to get done today, because we need to work on communication. And I think it's definitely something that I struggle with, to make that space and that time consistently for Miller to work on communication. And so just making it part of your life as much as you can when you can is, I think, really, I know, is very, very important. And so that persistence, that just, we're gonna do this today, and even if it's just 5 minutes here or there, that's gonna be enough for today, but I'm not gonna get discouraged, and I'm not gonna give up, and we're gonna keep trying. And it's not just me that gets frustrated. Miller gets frustrated.
Right.
You know, like I mentioned earlier, he's very, very active. And so trying to sit down and work on communication can be very frustrating for him as well. So trying to help him to develop that tenacity to keep working on communication when it's not going well. I mean, we have off days. We have days where he's really interested in and wanting to communicate, and there are other days where he's just more interested in his toys and he doesn't want to sit down with me and he doesn't want to look at his device. You know, it is I can tell it's frustrating for him to try to use his device, and he'll push it away. And knowing when to give them that space is hard too as a parent. And when your child is not receptive to that, you need to be able to give them that space. Like, maybe it's a good time for me to work on communication, but he's hungry or he's tired and it's not a good time for him. So, you know, allowing your children to be human just like you are. And when there are times when he seems more receptive, to say, okay, I need to, dinner's going to be an hour late, or that task isn't going to get done, because now is a good time for a communication with Miller. And yeah, I would say I need to work on that, but that's okay. You know, that's part of being a special needs parent, is that you are a parent first and foremost. And you're, even though you want to be a speech and language therapist, you are not. And so, you know, utilizing them to give you tips and tricks for when you're at home, to try to facilitate that, but just knowing that ultimately your responsibility is to love your children, and not get too fixated, but also to find that space and to make it a priority, to keep working, to have that persistence and not grow weary of some challenges that come with teaching a nonverbal child to communicate.
I think it's important that even if he's nonverbal, which is, you know, humans' most used form of communication, is that it's not that they don't know what you're saying. So I think it's important for parents and people that are working with children or people that are nonverbal, is to not limit the input that you're giving them. So it's, you know, just because they're nonverbal doesn't mean you don't talk to them. Doesn't mean that you don't use beyond basic vocabulary. I mean, you can still tell them what you're doing, ask them to do certain things, and then you do that for them, or you show them what you're doing, because they're picking that up. And just like the fact that, like, if we say, let's go eat or get in your high chair, and he's upstairs in his room and we go get him in his room, we're like, it's time to eat, let's get in your high chair, he will come straight downstairs and go right to his high chair. But the only reason he knows that is because we haven't limited our expectation of what he understands. And because if we were just, he's nonverbal, so why even talk to him, and we just go get his hand and take him down there, he doesn't know what we're doing or why we're doing it. Or, like, you know, we're getting him dressed after a bath or whatever, and, hey, we need to put your diaper on, lay down, he'll immediately lay down. And that's important too with him, because I mean, he will be a full-grown man someday, so right now, sure, we can kind of manhandle him, but at some point, you know, he's going to be a 35-year-old man that you're not going to be able to, you know, grab and kind of flip down to lay down like you can a child. So it's important for them to understand that too. So I think it's very important to not limit your expectations. And you just treat it like any other, like if you have an infant that you know can't talk, but you go to the grocery store with them, you're talking about, hey, let's get some pasta. What do you want? Let's get some cereal. Like, you're talking to them as if they're going to respond when you know they're not going to, but that's how language acquisition happens.
Right.
And they have language acquisition. It's just all internal, and they just can't then communicate back to us in the same way we communicated to them. They do communicate back to us, but it's just in a different mode. So that's important too.
Yeah. And that's one thing I don't know that I mentioned about Angelman syndrome. As far as we can tell, and again, it's difficult with them being nonverbal, but are Miller's receptive communication, so his ability to listen and hear what we're saying, is not impacted by Angelman. So he can understand what we're saying, but his output is what's his expressive language is what is a challenge for him. And so remembering that, you know, in infancy, we hear, our children hear thousands of times the same word before they ever acquire that word. And so, like Sean was saying, it's really critical that we speak to our nonverbal children, not in baby talk, not in, you know, to speak to them as if someday they will speak back to us, so that they can learn those skills and sentence structure. It also helps with literacy, not only just their ability to communicate, but they also, we hope for a day when Miller is literate, that he can sit down and read a book. And that is not today, but, you know, and it's hard because we don't know how much of written he understands. He has learned his letters so far. He can recognize most of his letters.
Some colors and shapes.
Yeah. And that's through persistence of his therapists and his, so he's learning these things. And I think it's just interesting how complex communication is with a nonverbal child. And
well, it is with all of us. It's just, we don't realize.
Yes, that's true.
We just don't realize how complicated communication actually is, because everybody that you know learns it, and they all learn it the same way, just by hearing people speak it. And then all of a sudden they start trying out words. And then those sounds, people recognize them as words. They're like, oh, if I keep making this sound, this is what I get. I mean, that's how you learn language. And this just shows you how complicated that is, and how much motor planning goes into this little bitty place in your face. You know, there's so much learning. There's so much motor planning that has to go on. And that just kind of really highlights that with him being nonverbal.
Yeah, totally. Are there any last things you'd like to add to your special topic about communication? I love everything you guys have said. It's been great.
I guess, I mean, I think the biggest thing with communication with a nonverbal child is to not grow weary, to make it a priority, and to keep trying. And these very, you know, what feel like these very minute and delicate progresses that your child will make, really intensely celebrate them, not just for them, but also for yourself, because you help them achieve that. And that's huge. It's huge, because so much work goes into communicating with a nonverbal child, that when you have those, you know, potentially smaller triumphs, really treat them as a triumph and use that to fuel your persistence with helping them to communicate, because it's the little things that you really have to celebrate when you have a disabled child, because they just, those triumphs might be fewer and farther between, but when they happen, they're magical. So just, hang in there. They will learn to communicate with you, and it's a real blessing when they do communicate with you and you feel those successes. So keep trying.
Oh, I love that. That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your tips. This is great.
Good. I'm glad we could kind of give, I don't know, hopefully a little fruit to some families that are struggling. It's hard. It is.
Well, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Check out the show notes for links to Etsy PEC systems that Candace mentioned as an option for alternative communication. If you want to connect and interact with other parents of rare kiddos, join our Facebook support group called Parents of Children with Rare Conditions. It's great, and the more the merrier. Join us next week for episode 16 with Kimball's feeding therapist, Kimberly, as she gives us practical strategies to help our selective eaters. See you then.